Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast exploring the world of work and how creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and rule breakers infuse their daily lives with creativity and curiosity. Everyone's favorite blind Australian filmmaker is back on the podcast to promote his latest film, Idiom. Okay, everyone is a strong descriptor. How about my favorite blind Australian filmmaker? I can't help it, Gough makes me chortle. His word, not mine. From the angle he would take on true crime podcasts and why crime shows are awful and depressing, to providing educational moments related to geography, grammar, and other assorted and assertive topics, Gough brings the Beer Nuts Productions fun factory straight to your earholes with production tales and stories of creative exploration. We talk about how he approached this film differently than previous films, how he wrote with the lead actress in mind, things you can't unsee or even unlearn, and most importantly, the hard truth that you can't unstupid stupid people. As you'll learn in this episode, Gough is a healer and a helper. So sit back and let him mildly entertain you for a good solid 50 minutes. Show notes for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/769. While you're there, you'll also find the entire podcast archive, links to the short documentary series and weekly newsletter, and the latest merch to show your love and support of the show. If you hear banging going on outside, don't worry. There's no one digging a grave. It's just my neighbor doing whatever he does on a Friday night with a hammer.
Lucy hasn't taken a flight over to Vancouver and, starting to tick off her bucket list items over there.
Maybe I should give her a call. Be like, hey, can you start your list over here?
Maybe you should.
With my luck, she would be like, this is the wrong Vancouver, you piece of shit. And then I'd be first on the list.
Well, that's true. Everyone's expecting a nice Canadian village, but instead they get where you are. So, you know, they get the woods.
The furthest thing from a nice Canadian village.
Though I have been to Vancouver. It's far from a village. I have never seen so many adult bookstores in all my life as I have seen in Vancouver. It's true. Like, walking down the main streets of Vancouver, there's like nothing but adult bookstores. They just must be like in constant fits of masturbation around every corner. It's amazing things. But anyway, I will let you do, no doubt, a very good intro, and I'll be quiet.
Now, I'm super confused. Are you talking about Vancouver, Washington? Because we don't have
Vancouver, BC, like in Canada.
Yeah. Because I'm like, yeah, we're prudish here comparatively speaking.
You're Oregon, though, aren't you? You're in Oregon?
In Washington, just north of
Oregon. Oh, you're in Washington.
So they have different rules about adult stores and strip clubs than we do here.
Yeah, no, I do recall when I was in Seattle, one of the comedians, this is back in 2004, so I'm sure laws have changed and whatnot, but this is back in 2004, and the comic that I was working with, he's like, hey, man, you want to go out and get some beers and have a good time after the show? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, because he was a really good guy. So we did, and as young men tend to, even though I'm blind, so it's pointless me going to strip clubs because I can't see fucking anything, but be that as it may, you know, he's like, you want to go to the peelers? He called them the peelers because, see, they peel off their clothes. So, you know, peelers. So he's like, you want to go to the peelers? And I'm like, yeah, why not? I can drink beer. It's all fine. And, you know, the girls will be nice and close. So, you know, I might see something. He's like, oh, no. It's all behind glass. And it's all these rules. I'm like, fuck, this is like the worst strip club ever. But anyway, I've digressed yet again. I will now allow you to do your nice introduction.
Actually, this is what we call this show now. It's like Gough digresses for an hour. Do we really need an introduction at this point? Because if anyone is confused about who you are, they obviously, this is their first time listening to Getting Work to Work, or the first time that they've ever experienced you. So I think they've already left by now. So we've got regular listeners at this point.
Well, we've covered adult bookstores, masturbation, and strip clubs, and geography. That's all right. In the first 4 or 5 minutes. We're kicking goals, but you should probably at least say who I am in case there's any, you know, you gotta, you know, talk me up, you know, give me something.
Oh, I will. So Goff is a blind filmmaker from the Gold Coast of Australia, and his bread and butter is called beernutsproductions.com. And for $4.95 a download, you can be entertained infinitely through his back catalog of mockumentaries and films and books and audiobooks. And if you don't want to give him any money, he's got a free podcast that you can download and enjoy that I'm sure we'll talk about later as well. Goff, welcome to Getting Work to Work, my friend. It's good to see you.
Well, yes, thank you. Thank you, Chris, for such a sterling introduction. It was all, I appreciate all of that, except I would have said mildly entertained, not just entertained infinitely. I mean, we've got to, you know, set our standards somewhere, you know? So I think mildly entertained would be the correct adjective to use.
Mildly, infinitely. We're just creating a spectrum of entertainment here.
Yes. Yes, the spectrum. We won't touch that. But yes, indeed.
You've matured since the last time we talked.
No, I've regressed. I'm going backwards, I've decided. So yes.
You know, I thought a great question to start with would be, if you were going to host a true crime podcast, what would your angle be?
Well, I remember, do you recall, O.J. Simpson decided he'd write a book called If I Did It, Like This Is How I Would Do It?
Yes.
It's like, and it's like, because everyone knows he's guilty, and he's so at some point he's like, oh, fuck it, I may as well just, you know. And so if I was to host a true crime podcast, I just have the criminals on and, you know, take us through it. Tell me how we will go about it. And then I'd question their skills and I'd be like, well, do you really think you took enough time digging that shallow grave? Do you think it would have been better if it was an extra foot deeper perhaps? Or was your stalking techniques, were they spot on? Could you have stalked better? I would have, you know, I would have really gotten into the nitty gritty of the crime and made sure that next time they do it, they don't get caught. I'd be a helper.
I like a helper. Yeah, that makes sense. Educator, helper, and reformer.
Well, yes, because we're reforming their skills so that next time they want to, you know, do something of that nature, they can do it successfully and not get caught.
Now, if
anyone, because I'm here to help.
You are here to help, and I appreciate it about you. I appreciate that about you. I can speak tonight. But that's one of the things I appreciate about you, Goff, is like you're a man of surprises, because you had some great jokes in your latest film about true crime podcasts. And is that something that you actually enjoy, or do you just enjoy it as a joke?
Yeah, no, I just enjoy making fun of them and people who listen about them, because I can put my hand on my heart and say I have never once listened to a true crime podcast.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
I couldn't think of anything more boring. Like, I find, like, crime shows on TV, like, when they interview the police detective and he's taking you through this, you know, this serial killer who terrorized the town for 5 years and this is how I caught him. I mean, I couldn't think of anything more depressing and awful to watch and spend my life. Like, why would you want to watch something? I mean, people do, obviously, otherwise it wouldn't be a thing. But I mean, for me, I just couldn't.
So is it just people who want to be mildly, not even mildly entertained, that watch this stuff? Or like your point in the movie is like, maybe only psychopaths watch this stuff and listen to this stuff.
Well, I reckon, yes. I mean, who has fun watching that? I mean, seriously, what fun is there to be had? It's depressing and awful, and like people are dying and relatives are sad and people are crying, and like it's awful. I don't understand what the appeal is. Like I get on one level, I suppose their counter argument would be, but how interesting is it learning about how the criminal was caught? And yes, I can see that point of view. I totally get that, but even still, man, I mean, the dude's a police detective. That's his job. I mean, we don't go down and ask the plumber how he unblocked the toilet. I mean, that's what he does. That's the man's job. We just leave him alone, let him do his gig.
Maybe we should.
Maybe we should.
Maybe that's we true. Should.
Maybe we'll encourage people to quiz plumbers on unblocking toilets.
That's right. You know, because, you know, what is your preferred type of plunger? Is it, is it the shallow plunge, the deep plunge, the chemical plunge? What is it?
Well, I'm sure there are multiple types of plungers. If you go to the local hardware store or wherever they sell plungers, I'm sure there are many different brands and types of plungers that you could choose from, and I'm sure all plumbers have their preferred.
Just like we all have our preferred type of toilet seat.
Well, yes, my heated, the one, yes. Yes.
Rounded or elongated?
Well, I'm a fancy man, so I do enjoy getting back to nature and just ripping the seat off and pretending I'm over a hole in the middle of the forest.
That works too. There's my favorite leaf. One of the things that I appreciate you about you, Goff, is that you are constantly producing new work, and your latest film, Idiom, is, one could say, a departure from what you normally make, which I appreciate so much more because you took a risk, you took a chance on something new. So what inspired this shift in tone and style?
Well, to be honest with you, there's a couple of things. Firstly, to be clear, it is a comedy. So people are listening, still listening, as you said earlier, if people are listening, it's still a comedy. It's just a different type of comedy, I guess, more of a mystery kind of a comedy, I guess. Would that be a fair comment, Chris?
I think mystery. I liked how you used the phrase peculiar and intriguing. I like those two words together.
Yes, no, I agree. I agree. That's why I used them. But it is a comedy film, so it's not like I've done a big, heavy, hard-hitting drama or sci-fi classic or anything like that. So it is still a comedy film. But to answer your question, there was a couple of things that kind of inspired it. The first thing was Lucy, who plays the main character in the film. I worked with her on the previous film, which is the horse racing mockumentary that I made. So she was the stylist. So she only had a very small role, but I could tell she was a very talented lady. And I'm like, I really want to work with you again because you're super talented and this is a really crappy kind of role for you. So I don't usually do this, but I thought to myself, well, what can I get her to do? And so I thought, well, I'll write something new, which isn't usually, again, what I do. I usually go through my back catalogue and pick something out. But so I thought I'll write something new and I'll have Lucy's voice in my head as I'm writing the lead character. And then I thought, well, what? I don't want to really do a mockumentary. I want to do something a bit different. And then I sort of came up with the first part of it that I wrote was the big main scene where there's a corpse in the front yard. And so I sort of wrote that because I thought that was a sort of a funny situation to be a part of. And then once I had that, then it was just a matter of building everything else around it. But it was sort of drawn by, because Lucy's fabulous. But then here's the thing though. So I call her up and I'm like, hey, Lucy, I've got this script that I've written that I really want you to do. You know, what do you think? And she's like, well, Goff, I actually live in Sydney now. So probably not. But look, send the script and we'll have a chat. So I said, all right. So I was a bit disappointed, but I sent her the script and 24 hours later, she calls me back and she's like, I'll fly up to do this because this is really, really good and I really like it. So I'll fly up and do it for you. And I'm like, oh, awesome, fantastic. So she came up from Sydney especially to do the film, which I was very grateful for, and, and rehearsals and stuff. And, yeah, so she's an awesome person, but, very talented. So that's sort of what sparked this film.
That's cool. How far away is Sydney from the Gold Coast?
1 hour flight.
Okay. So not too far. So
she was going from
Portland to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Portland to Los Angeles. But I mean, flights aren't overly cheap in Australia. You'd probably be up for about $250. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world, but still, I mean, I pay my actors, of course, and we did come to a few other arrangements to make it easier for her so that she's not, you know, out of pocket by any stretch, because otherwise that would be unfair. So we did come to a few other little arrangements and whatnot to make it workable, but it's still, my original point still stands. It was very nice of her to come on board and fly up from Sydney to do the film. So I was very grateful.
I wasn't trying to like poo-poo her drive to do that. I was more curious what that distance was for people that are ignorant to the geography, again, of Australia.
No, I understand. Yeah, if you're driving, it'd be like a 12-hour drive. Otherwise, okay. It's a 1-hour flight.
Got it. Okay, well, that makes sense. I love that scene on the yard, by the way. Like, so I watched the film twice tonight. Because the first time I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch? And then the second time I wanted to take it in and really watch it again. And on that scene, the first time, you know, you hear the words, you hear her acting, you hear your acting. But then the second time I watched her, not when she was delivering her lines, but when she was responding to you. And that is like a masterclass right there in like acting, just seeing her body language and how she held herself. That was perfect.
Yeah. She's super talented, man. You can understand why I went away and wrote a script, especially for her. So I just wanted to work with her again, cause I knew that she was awesome. And that role that I'd her in the horse racing film, cause that was the first time I'd ever met her. I didn't know who she was. She just came in for an audition, so I had no idea who she was or anything of that nature. She'd only been in the country for about 3 months because she is Irish. So that's the other thing too. Obviously, you would have noticed there is a specific Irish joke that's in the film.
Yes.
That Wayne, the future corpse, delivers, which is my favourite joke in the whole film, it has to be said. And I asked her if she'd ever heard that Irish joke before, and she said no. So I was very proud of myself. But as I don't know how proud one can be of that particular joke, but I was very proud.
Yeah.
So
how many takes did it take in order to not laugh at that joke, or was it more of a groaning joke?
No. Wayne that delivered it, there was no laughter. He just, I'm very pedantic with how I like my lines delivered. So it took him a couple of goes, and we got it on the third take. He was all good to go, so we were fine. But because, again, even with stupid jokes like that, they still need to be delivered correctly.
When you have a joke about, you know, a male body part and you're older, sometimes you need more than one take to get the joke landed.
Very true. Very true indeed. I wouldn't know about that. I'm still young and virile. But
that's what I learned in the bedroom scene.
Yes, that was some high quality acting right there on my part. But dear, I've forgotten what my point was, but I'm sure it was very good.
I even forgot too. I got lost in trying to make you laugh. I'm sorry. I just wanted to crack jokes and make you laugh.
Well, the overriding point is, Lucy is awesome, and she did an awesome job, and she's a quality person for agreeing to do my silly film.
Yeah. So as you're writing that first scene, how do you start coming up with other scenes and connecting them to tell a story? Do they connect? Are they disconnected? Like, you know, does the sum of the film mean anything compared to the individual parts? Like, you define what an idiom is, but you know, that only takes you so far in like watching the film and wondering what's going on.
Well, that's why I called it idiom, is for that reason, because what the words are being spoken may not be what is actually happening. So, you know, because obviously for those who may not be aware, like idiom, like for example, can't see the forest for the trees, or I'm over the moon, like those sorts of phrases are idioms. You know, so they don't necessarily describe what exactly is happening. You know, you need to understand the phrasing. So that's sort of where the title came from. So to answer your question, after I wrote that main scene, then I went back to the start. And I was like, okay, well, who are these people? Let's get a beginning to this project. So I wrote the first few scenes, and then I'm like, okay, well, now we need some kind of a resolution. So how do I want to sort of tie all this together, and what do I want to say? So that's where then I worked on the middle and ending of the film. So that was sort of the how it all sort of fit together in my writing process.
And is that different than your normal writing process, where you're kind of like trying to like put the puzzle together? It seems a little different than normal.
Yeah, I guess it is. Usually with my writing, I usually get a hook to start with. Like, I want to make fun of the horse racing industry, so I'll write a mockumentary about that. Now, who am I going to use to pick on the horse racing industry? And that's sort of where we start and we go. And like, for example, years ago, a good example would be when I wrote the film The War on Drugs. Mm-hmm. I started with the conversation that the presenter has with the journalist, which ended up being about halfway through the film, because that was the easiest one to write. And then again, I knew I wanted to do a mockumentary about the war on drugs. And then it was like, okay, well, I've got this big chunk here written with the interview with the journalist. Now I'll just need to, the other people that are involved in the drug industry, and I'll get them involved and write their bits and pieces. So, you know, I usually start with some kind of a hook and then dig it out. But with this one, it was slightly different. It was like, well, I got Lucy. I really want to work with her. What can I write for her? What's going to suit her voice? Because I've got her voice in my head when I'm writing her lines. And then I'm like, okay, I've got this funny little scenario of having a corpse on the front lawn of a house and the boyfriend being the stupidest person alive and so forth and so on. And yeah, so that's sort of, once you get that scene, and then it's because I did for a little while, I was a little bit stumped. I'm like, okay, well, I've got this scene, but I need to have other shit with it. So what am I going to do? So that's, like I say, that's when I came up with the start to let's build the characters and we get a start. And then I thought, okay, that's when the idea of getting a narrator in and all of that sort of stuff sort of came in then as well. And the middle and the ending at the end.
Yeah. I love the insight into that process too, because it does speak to you spreading your wings and trying something new so that you can, you know, keep entertaining people.
So that I can force people to work with me. I've written this for you, Lucy. You better do it.
Yeah. Did it feel different as you were going through the process? I mean, it had to have felt a little different.
Well, I mean, I'm still writing and it's still comedy. So I still have the same principle of I've got to make this funny and entertaining, which is always my number one goal. So in that regard, not really. It was just different in that I also knew pretty early, like once I'd done those main scenes and the start, I then thought of the middle and the ending, and then I came up with my little concept of what I wanted to do, and then just typed it out. So in that regard, it wasn't overly different, I suppose.
Well, that's good. I still think it's pretty awesome though that you tried something different, even though yes, it's still comedy, but you know, I from an outsider's perspective, I did enjoy that shift.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
I loved the narrator. I thought the narrator stole the whole movie. Like, yeah, Lucy's great, but Charles, his narration is just like, he's saying almost everything that you want the viewer to be saying in that moment.
Yes. Well, also, so it was important to me to give the narrator a personality. Mm-hmm. Because too many times you see narration and it can be quite dull. So, you know, and Beer Nuts Productions hopefully is far from being dull. So, I was like, well, the narrator must have personality. And I'd worked with Charles twice before. So on the education system, he was the education minister, if you recall. And then the Neil Maxwell Smith interview, he was like a Rupert Murdoch type character in that.
Okay.
And so I'd worked with him before, so I knew he was very good and I knew his voice would lend itself to what I wanted. So again, I actually had his voice in my brain when I was typing out the narration monologues. And I, like I said, it was also really important to make sure that the narrator had some kind of a personality and character about him as well, because that's key for the thing being entertaining.
Absolutely. Do you giggle as you write?
Yes, sometimes I do. Like when I wrote my Irish joke and a few of the other, there's a couple of other jokes in there where I just give myself a little bit of a nod and say, "Well done, Goth. That's quite humorous work." So I give myself a bit of a chuckle and a pat on the back, and we move on.
Nice. Yeah, there was a line where he's talking about the shot where you're holding Hunter sleeping. And he starts like, "This is a really creepy shot. I'm really uncomfortable." He says it much better than that, but that's the essence of it. And that's where you start really like taking the narrator to this other level. And then later when he's like, "This story should be about me," which then you start thinking like, wait, you just introduced her as a psychopath. And now you're saying the story could be about you. Are you a psychopath?
Is everybody a psychopath? We're all psychopaths in our own special way.
That's right. Because that's how I think about the last half of the film, is like, you question who's the psychopath here. Like the whole scene with Lucy and Al in the car, like Al is the creepiest dude in the car. And yet you know everything about Lucy. So you're like, this poor chump is going to get destroyed.
Well, that's yes, that was the point. So yes, I'm glad you picked up on that. So yes, well done you. Because not everybody has, it has to be said. So the ending has confused a few, but that's okay. It's meant to be a little bit ambiguous in nature. That's the point. Like, I know what it all means, but because I wrote it. But but no, you are 100% right. Al's direction, he read the script and he's like, "How do you want me to play it?" And I said, "You have to be the world's creepiest person." And he said, "I can do that." And I said, "Great." And we rehearsed. But yeah, so yes, that's what you said is exactly the point of those couple of cast scenes. That's okay. The point.
Now, When I first heard the ending line about, you know, she can't see what's in front of her, but she's a great driver, so she's going to keep driving anyway, I connected it back to the lottery ticket at the beginning of the film, because you said she wanted to win the lottery, and yet she couldn't see what was in front of her. Did I make the right connection there? Am I close?
Well,
or am I missing things?
No. How can I word it without giving too much away? If she hadn't have made the decisions that she has made in the scenes that you see, then perhaps her life would be different based on that opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she made a rash decision, and through that rash decision, other things happened. And then she's in the sort of situation that she finds herself in.
Hmm. So is she a psychopath because of those rash decisions, or was she a psychopath beforehand?
Well, that's only something that you can decide, because I'm not going to tell you.
What would Donna say?
She'd say, "Don't be a jerk, just tell the man, answer his question." But no,
what would she say about the psychopath?
Oh, the psychopath, what did she say? I don't know. I should ask. She has watched the film, and I she sent me her critique, but her main point was that she was glad that we cut away from the me in the bed scene when we did, because there's some things that you just can't unsee.
Oh, that scene. That's the finest method acting I've ever seen.
It's the little things that tickle me, right? And when we were editing that, like, obviously I know what I'm doing, but right. I'm in control of my actions, you know. But when we edit that, I did have to give myself a little bit of a laugh and a little bit of a pat on the back. Because I was very impressed with the happy noises and the facial expressions I was pulling made me chortle somewhat. So yes, I was quite pleased with my performance in that scene. But yes, Donna was glad when we cut away, because yes, she said that there are certain things you just can't unsee.
Now, what's interesting is, like, from a production standpoint, when you're filming a scene like that with narration over a shot, like, have you timed it out so you know how long you need to hold on that shot?
That would be the sensible thing to do, wouldn't it, Chris? I don't like doing that anyway because it gives you no leeway. So we filmed it on a Monday. We did the voiceovers on a Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, we edited. So I knew, obviously, how long the voiceovers were going to be, kind of, and then I would just add an extra 30 seconds on. So, for example, with the bed scene, I put my phone on a two-minute timer. We press record on the camera, and then I pretended to be asleep for 2 minutes, and then my alarm goes off on my phone, and I do my awesome method acting. And then all we need to do when we're in the editing, we just tie up the voiceover and put it to where we need to put it, and that's how it all worked. Even down to the lottery voiceover, that was the same thing, except I had those lines in my head, so I was actually saying his lines in my head because we didn't have that recorded yet. But yeah, so that's essentially, and the stuff like when she's drinking her cups of tea and they're big long chunks of her just sitting around, or even the when she's picking up the package at the front door, those are things where we would film more footage than we need, because that's obviously the sensible thing to do in case you find yourself in a bit of a, you never want to find yourself where you don't have enough footage to go with the voiceover. Now, I understand the probably the more sensible thing to do would be to do the voiceovers on a Monday, have them properly timed out, and then film on the Tuesday, but we couldn't get locations on certain days, so that just wasn't going to be possible for me to do it that way. So that was also one of the little restrictions that I had as well.
Nice. So speaking of packages, is 6969 a legitimate postal code in Queensland?
No. In Australia, we've got six states, and each state has their own number to start a postcode with. So, for example, Queensland is the number 4 and then whatever. And New South Wales is the number 2 and then whatever. Victoria is the number 3 and then whatever. That is a complete... And also, the amount of people I've had to explain that address to, as in the joke of the address, is shocking, it has to be said.
I get a little bit of it, but I don't know if I get the pegging drive.
Well, you're aware of the sexual term of pegging, I assume? No?
No.
Oh, dear. Well, I'll explain it to you, and if you need to bleep it out or edit it out, you can.
Well, but we've already established that you're a healer and a helper, so you're just doing your duty.
I'm about to do both, Chris. Are you ready? You're sitting down. Are you ready for this? So pegging is essentially where the lady wears a strap-on and fucks her partner in the ass.
Okay.
So if you pegging drive, you boom, and thrusters point again. So it all works.
It does work. Okay.
But yeah, so and that's also the number 4 at the start because it's for you. So it's 4. So you know. So that's a lot of thought goes into all of these things, Chris.
It is too much thought. How much thought goes into that? I mean, I applaud you, sir. I applaud you.
Yeah, when I said to Ilya, this is the address I would like on the package, she obviously never bats an eyelid because she's been working with me for over 10 years. And she's like, no worries. That's what we'll do. It's number 4, pegging drive, thrusters point, or whatever it was. Yes.
Right.
Postcode, of course, is 6969, obviously. Yes. Obviously. So, yes. So there you go. I have continued to educate.
That's right.
You're welcome.
If I could get away with, fair use of the more you know sound, you know, there you go. Just have that in your head as you listen to this section of the podcast.
I'm just curious. Do any other of your guests, you know, those fine, outstanding citizens that talk about educational books and whatnot that they've written, or beautiful poetry that they've written, none of them have wished to discuss pegging at all? I can't imagine.
I wish they would. I mean, there's sometimes in this show where you're like, let's just be human beings here. You know, I think that's one of the things, again, that I appreciate about you is that, you know, you bring such a well-rounded view of life to the show that it's sorely needed in the podcast realm. So thank you.
Well, look, it's my pleasure. If ever you require any more smuts, you just come and find me and I will happily deliver.
Or I just go to Vancouver, Canada, because apparently you just walk down Main Street. It's all there.
It is, man. I'm telling you, straight up. If anybody from Vancouver, British Columbia is a listener, email Chris some photos of the main streets of Vancouver. There is nothing but adult bookstores. It is outrageous behavior. I applaud it. Good for them. But it's not my thing. It's too much reading. It's like homework. I don't understand the arousal of it all.
Give Goff all pictures all the time. So one of the things that I noticed too, Scott continues to up his production game. He did some really cool things in this film, specifically in the car scenes. Like, did he mount the camera onto the car in order to get those shots?
Yes. So there was a few. So we had a long meeting. So I said to Scott, look, we're going to be doing some filming in a car, which is not something we've ever done before. My suggestion to Scott, and we end up doing what I suggested, not because I'm the boss, but because it turned out it was going to be, because I suggested one thing and then Scott said, well, we've got a few other alternatives. And then we talked about it and we went back to my plan. So I said, I think the best thing to do would be to put a GoPro on the passenger side window. We ended up putting it on the side mirror of the car, not the window. But you are correct. He does have a mount that can go on the side of the car and he can actually put the camera it can hold up to 15 kilos, which would be about 8 pounds.
Okay.
Is kilos more? Yeah, no. No. It's the other way around, isn't it? There's pounds. It's two pounds to a kilo. So it's about 30 pounds. So it'll hold about 30 pounds. Excuse me. Yes, that's better math. So it'll hold about 30 pounds, about 15 kilos, which is obviously enough weight for the camera and then some. But I didn't like that idea because I was a bit concerned because I said, we're actually driving though. So we're actually going to be on working streets. And if you get some like dickhead on a bicycle or a motorbike or something like that, it goes too close to the car or the wind picks up or something like that, or it's just not attached properly, we've lost a very, very expensive camera and you'll be very, very upset. So I said, I really think sticking a GoPro to the window, but that shot looked crummy. So we went with the side mirror, but then I said, we need another shot in the back behind them. So we need you in the back. I said, obviously the GoPro can't see you and neither can the rear view mirror. So it's going to be a bit tricky, but we're able to do it, which obviously you saw. So yeah, but it was, there was a long meeting prior and even on the day, it took about half an hour to set up the shots because to make it so that we couldn't be seen. Cause there's a video on the Beer Nuts Productions Instagram where I'm climbing out of the boot of a car. I'm not sure if you saw that, Chris.
I did do that.
So I was doing like the sound from the trunk of the car, which is obviously highly illegal because I'm in the, you know, trunk of a car while we're traveling up and down the streets. And Scott's in the back filming and we got the GoPro on the side mirror, but it took a while to set it all up and to make it workable. But in saying all of that, it came out very well and I was very, very pleased because it was tricky to do, but we did it. So good for us.
Good for you. No, that was great. And I think one of the interesting things too, you know, the way that you filmed that closing scene with the lighting and it matching the lighting when she's in bed and the camera's pushing in on her. Like, I felt like, were those two connected? Were these all dreams?
I've had a few people ask that as well, to be honest. You're not the only one. That really wasn't where I was going, but
you can take it.
I'm not here to poo-poo on people's thoughts and opinions and feelings. So I've had a few people because You never know. Al might even be in the trunk of that car for all you know.
You never know. I mean, she just kind of left him there. The time of day that she left him and the time of day she was driving, there was enough time for her to go back and get him.
Well, you don't know if she slipped something in that drink or what she might have done. You just don't know.
You don't know. And that's the thing about psychopaths. You just don't know.
She's a cunning and clever girl, that shiny wish lock.
Another thing that I want to emphasize, too, is the music. I really enjoyed the original music from Jacob. What's his last name?
Aegis, I believe it's pronounced.
Okay. I wasn't sure how to pronounce it, but it gave me a real Twin Peaks vibe.
Ah, no, okay, cool. I like that. That's good. That's good.
Especially at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted something that was a bit dark and a bit mysterious. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I went with that. I was like, I thought when we were coming up, again, I tell everybody what to do because I'm controlling. So when I was wanting that particular piece of music, I have no musical ability at all. It's one thing that I'd love to be able to play the guitar or play the piano or have some kind of musical ability. It's just not within me. It's a shame. It's a cool skill to have. For those who are listening and who can play a musical instrument, I'm very jealous because it's a wonderful, wonderful skill to have. Anyway.
You'd be the total package if you had that ability, right?
Well, I just think it's a really nifty thing to do. I mean, and I could imagine like on a really stressful, no good day, you come home and you play a bit of piano or you just strum the guitar. And I could imagine it being a very therapeutic thing to do as well. I could imagine that. But in any case, I said to Jake, you know, I just want sort of a random piano notes. Like, and then I sort of gave a bit of an example, like dum-de-doing and whatnot, and sort of singing it out to him with what I was after. And he just sort of did that sort of what I was after straight away. And yeah, that's how that piece of music got born. So yeah, but it was perfect for what I required because I wanted something super dark and mysterious in tone.
Yeah. Well, and it stands out too because you don't use music very often in your movies other than that jaunty piano number that's on a lot of the earlier stuff.
Yeah, the Beer Nuts theme music, I call that. But yes, it's for the Beer Nuts theme music, the guy who wrote that, Brendan, I said to him, I said, I want the cheesiest late night theme song you can do on the piano. And that's what he did. So, because he's like, when he sent it to me, he's like, I can redo it if you want. And I'm like, no, that's like super perfect. You can't beat that. That's perfection.
Yeah. So how have people responded to this film?
It's been a bit mixed, not as in bad, as in some people have really enjoyed it, and then some people have been really confused by it, and some people just don't. People like resolutions, I've decided. People like to be told what to think and what to do, and that's not always a good thing. I think it's good to sometimes let people make up their own minds. But, some folks haven't enjoyed it so much in the fact that they haven't it's not tied up with a nice little ribbon and a bow at the end. It's, you know, you got to actually sit there and have a bit of a think and a bit of a scratch of the old head to see what you think it's all about. But as far as like the comedy of it all goes, everyone's been having a good laugh and been enjoying it in that regard. It's just the ending and the meaning of the film has been interpreted different ways by different folks.
Yeah. So when you get someone whose review you question or you're not quite sure, like you want to listen to them anymore, like how do you respond to perceived negative reviews?
Well, it depends on who they are and what they said. So sometimes it's just best to ignore somebody because if they're stupid, then you're not going to unstupid them. So you just be like the lady from Frozen and let it go, you know? So...
Oh, I wish we could unstupid people, Goff.
Well, I mean, there's just some that you can't. So you just got to accept that and move on with your life. But then there's others.
Have you been watching American News? You can't unstupid people.
No, that's precisely correct. But it's very, very true. Some outrageous behavior, but that's for another day. But exactly. Yes, there are other folks who, you know, they'll give me their feedback and opinion, and I'll engage with a chat because they're sensible and they have sensible feedback, and that they want to, the, you know, it's interesting sometimes to go back and forth, and you can learn things, and it's always good to learn things. So, yeah, and then there's, you know, so, and then obviously people who give me praise, I tell them to give me more and keep speaking. But I'm just joking. But no, it is, look, it's, when people give their feedback, I always take it on board and think about what they've said. And then sometimes, depending if I agree with it or disagree with it, I'll dismiss it or I'll accept it. And if it's something, if it's constructive criticism, and I go, oh, yeah, that's actually a really good point, maybe in future I can do that and I'll get a better result, you know. So I do listen to the feedback and then decide whether I think it's valid or not, you know, because at the end of the day, it is my work. So nobody knows it better than myself. So I will then, sum it all up and make an informed opinion.
Nice. Well, apart from Idiom, other things at the Beer Nuts Productions Fun Factory is your podcast. And one of the things that I really appreciate that you do is when you have musicians, you play their music. And with Al and with Ashley, those were two episodes that I listened to recently. And I just love how you brought in at the end their musical talents as well.
Oh, yeah, well, of course. So I don't understand why you wouldn't, to be honest. It makes perfect sense to me to do that. That's what you're there to listen to. And then, I mean, I've had some really great musicians on that podcast. Episode 2, so if you go right back to the beginning, there's a young woman called Christy Lee, and her voice is like silk. It's like she is, well, that's probably the wrong way to describe it, because it's a really powerful voice. It's not, silk is smooth, but she's just like a powerhouse of a singer. And she does a version, like she does an original at the end, which is super cool, but she opens the show by doing What's Love Got to Do With It? And I reckon it's one of the best versions of that song I've ever heard. She absolutely crushes it. It was like made for her voice. But in any case, my point to answer your question, if you have someone on the show that's a musician, I mean, I do also have a rule when I have it, because I wanted to have a musician on and they said, oh, I can only do it by Zoom. And they only lived about half an hour away from the studio. And I refused to have them on because I said, well, no. I said, because I want you to play live in the studio and you're only half an hour away, so you can come down, you can get your guitar out, you can play a song, we'll have a chat and then finish with, you know, some of your original stuff and it'll be great. And they wouldn't do it, so I wouldn't have them on because it's not the same. I'm not going to talk to someone on Zoom about their music without having people give them the opportunity to listen to their music to decide whether they like it or not, you know. So it seems like part of the package, if you have a musician on, you got to listen to their shit. I mean, you know, that just seems common sense. But yeah, no, I've had some very cool guests. I had a woman called Tanya De Jong on the show, who is one of Australia's big advocates for psychedelic assisted therapy. And again, I shan't be putting my opinion on her personally forward, just to say I do agree with psychedelic assisted therapy. So it's something I'm in favor of, as long as it's done responsibly and in the right way and with trained professionals. But Tanya De Jong, people should listen to that interview and they can make up their own mind on her philosophies and what they think of her. So that was an interesting one. But I try and, so, you know, I've got some politicians in there and I've got some actors, people I know, people I don't know, and some musicians, comedians, all sorts of different folks. So, yeah, hopefully people do enjoy. We're up to 90. We've done 91 episodes, and we're not finished. There'll be a 92nd very shortly as well. Nice. So, yes, it still continues.
Oh, good. One of the things that I really enjoy is that you just dive right in without any bullshit. I mean, no theme song, no build up for 5 hours to get you to the interview. Like, you just dive right in and go. That's refreshing.
Well, why waste people's time? You know, I'm serious, man. Like, that's like what I don't understand, like, all the hullabaloo. Like, it's just people are impatient. Let's just get to the meat and potatoes. Let's just, you know, as we say here in Australia, I'm not here to fuck spiders, you know.
And those are some big fucking spiders there.
but Like when I decided I wanted to make a podcast, it was going to be very straightforward and very simple. I'll just get the person in the studio if possible. I mean, if they're overseas, then we do it by Zoom. Because that's the other thing. I've had other people that I've rejected because they wouldn't come into the studio when they live like literally 5 minutes down the road. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, I'm giving, like, I don't understand. Like, I'm providing you a platform to promote your shit. The least you can do is travel 5 minutes down the street. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It just blows my tiny mind. But anyway, that's how it goes. But I do take a lot of care and consideration into the guests that I've had on the show. And I also want to be clear, not all of them are people who I necessarily agree with, because there's a couple of guests, only one or two, who I have slightly different feelings and opinions on their professional or chosen topic. But I wasn't rude to them by any stretch, because that's silly. But in the spirit of fairness and balance and all of that sort of stuff, I think it's equally important to, well, it's like on social media, you know, there's a few people I follow on social media who I think are giant knobs, but I follow them because it's important to educate yourself on how other people are living. Just because they don't agree with you or you don't like them doesn't mean that they don't, it's ignorant to then refuse their existence as a human being. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And speaking of Al Gibson, I really appreciated, I didn't believe he could sing that well. Like when he sang, I'm like, holy shit, he sounds amazing. I had never heard him sing before.
I'll have to try and incorporate him into a film where you know, we're in a bar or something, and he can be the lounge singer in the bar or something like that.
Yeah, that with a leisure suit on and a comb over.
Well, no, he's gone the bald look like me now, so there's no more hair. Did you not notice the man has gone chrome dome like myself?
I did notice, but you know, you could have Maddie, you know, do some amazing hair work.
Hey, listen, she only has so much time and budget to play with, does poor Maddie. So, you know.
as my friend likes to tell me, God damn it, Martin, there's a budget here.
Well, yeah, she's very good, Maddie. I mean, she had a little bit of makeup work to do with this particular film. Also, obviously, because Lucy, every scene that she's in is essentially a different day. So she needed 7 different looks, which meant her makeup had to be constantly just changed ever so slightly. So she was in and out of the makeup chair and getting changed and all that sort of stuff all the time. She was a very good sport. But yeah, so Maddie, even though it may look on the surface that she might not have had a lot to do, she was a very busy lady throughout the shoot.
So, you know, I love asking this question, but like, who are you writing for next in your mind?
You'll be pleased to know the next project is actually already underway. So, yes. Usually there's a slight break, but there won't be this time. Well, depending on if everybody cooperates or not. But so the next film is absolutely all the locations are locked in. All but one actor. I'm going to have to audition for one of the acting roles because I wasn't able to find somebody. But and I'll be doing those auditions in a week or two. But everything is well underway for the next film.
Nice. And I won't ask what it is because you won't tell me. And then Donna will give you a call and she'll be like, just answer his questions, Goff.
Stop being a dick. He's a very nice man and he allows you to be on his podcast. So stop being rude and just answer the man's questions.
It's a Friday night, man, and I'm spending it with you.
How romantic. Eh? I mean, right.
Let me dim the lights. On that note, are there any movies that you're enjoying right now or you're looking forward to seeing?
That's a fine, fine question. When was the last time I went to the cinema? I went and I saw Argyle, mainly because, I mean, it's got a ripper cast and I love Sam Rockwell and everything Sam Rockwell does is fabulous. It was way too long, 2.5 hours. Have you seen Argyle?
I have not, no.
It should be like 2 hours, not 2 hours, 25. You could easily strip 25 minutes out of that film and you would not miss it. But besides that, because it just went on and like the climax, it's like, okay, we get it. Can we wrap it up now? Like, but oh no, there's a new baddie that we've got to fight now. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sakes, you know, we get it. So, but you know, it just went on and on and on. But anyway, besides that, it was very, very good. What else have I seen? I tell you what I saw, and I didn't like it so much. And I was really disappointed because I was really looking for the inner child in Goth was really excited because I love, obviously, Gene Wilder's version of Willy Wonka was phenomenal. I think everybody can agree. It was just 10 out of 10. Johnny Depp was like 0 out of 10 because that was he just made it creepy and wrong. And so I was – because I like Timothée Chalamet as an actor. I've seen him in some stuff, and I think he's really good, and I quite like him. So I was like, oh, this – I thought it's a good fit. He's got the sort of Gene Wilder kind of feel about him. I thought this is a good piece of casting. It'll be good. But it was so negative. And, oh, everybody's against him. And, oh, Jesus. I mean, like, if I was him, I would have thrown myself off the – bloody boat and drowned myself. I mean, it was the most miserable. It was supposed to be uplifting and happy. You know what I'm saying?
It was as if it was the tunnel scene through an entire film.
Oh, fuck. Have you watched it?
Not yet, no.
Okay, because I was going to say, if you wonder if you share my opinion, but look, there was everybody was a bad guy. It's like, can we have somebody in who's nice? Would that be too much to ask for poor Willie to get a bit of help? You know what I mean? Like, it was just like the obstacles that just were put in front of him were just too many. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. In a film, you know, your hero needs to overcome a couple of obstacles, but just a couple, not 5 dozen obstacles. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, just trying to get the third remake done is an obstacle on an obstacle on an obstacle, you know, because who wants to watch a third remake?
It was just too much, but it was a shame too, because I was genuinely like excited. It's like, actually, this is a funny Donna story for you. When the Muppets did their sort of comeback in what, about 2007, 2008, they made the movie with Jason Segel and Amy Adams. I don't know if you recall. It was a wonderful, wonderful film. Fantastic. Anyway, yeah, it was. That one was 10 out of 10. That was a great movie. It was so funny. It was really wonderful. Anyway, point is that Donna's kids at that time were quite young. They were, and so I said to Donna, can I go and watch The Muppets with you and the kids in the cinema? Because otherwise I'll look like some kind of a creepy pervert if I go into the cinema to watch The Muppets by myself. And she's like, yeah, no, we can do that. That's fine. So, but yeah, so there's, you know, everybody has memories from their childhood. And when they do something as an adult, you get really excited about going back there and hopefully, you know, having that inner child come out and getting the joy. But unfortunately, with the Willy Wonka remake, we did not feel such things.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to leave this episode on a downer. So where can people get an upper of their life watching Beer Nuts Productions films?
Well, that's very true, because yes, I am definitely the upper, not the downer, and it's beernutsproductions.com is the one-stop shop you need to go to. So I'm all over the socials, so there's clips on YouTube, and there's Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that other good stuff as well. So just type in Beer Nuts Productions and I will come up. And but if you actually want to watch all the films, there's now 30 films in total. It's beernutsproductions.com.
Awesome. You're just making us all look bad with 30 films. And, you know, just keep going, man. Just keep going.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I will endeavor to do my best.
Excellent. Well, as always, it's a pleasure talking with you, Goff. Knowing that there's another film in production right now, it will probably be next month that we talk again. So can't wait to see what you do next.
No, well, yes. I also can't wait to see what I do next. So, because you never know until the final edit, Chris.
That's right. Maybe that's what this episode will be called. I can't wait to see what I do next.
That's very nice. Yes, indeed.
If you'd like to be mildly entertained with a peculiar and intriguing comedy film, head to BeerNutsProductions.com and download BeerNuts Productions' latest film, Idiom. You can also find the link at this episode's show notes page at gwtw.co/769. There you'll also find a link to the official BeerNuts Productions category of Getting Work to Work, where you can listen to our pithy banter over the years. I think there's about 15 or 16 episodes there. It is a good time to be had by all, but especially Goff and I. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.